welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey Carris and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And this week we're reading No One Is Talking About This by Patricia Lockwood. But first, book news, and quite timely, the Women's Prize shortlist has been announced. So, drum roll. The shortlist is The Vanishing Half by Brit Bennett.
Hooray.
Which is still my tip to win.
Yeah.
Piranesi by Susanna Clarke. Unsettled Ground by Claire Fuller. Transcendent Kingdom by Yagi Arce. How the One-Armed Sister Sweeps Her House by Cherie Jones. And No One Is Talking About This by Patricia Lockwood. We're very on theme.
We are.
So of that shortlist, Annie, my tip is still The Vanishing Half. Mm. I won't say anything about No One Is Talking About This because we're about to talk about that, contrary to what the title might suggest. I am intrigued to read Transcendent Kingdom. I didn't get on with Homegoing, which was her Yagi Arce's much lauded debut, but I have heard such good things about Transcendent Kingdom. Plus, it has a beautiful cover.
It does. Stunning.
And it would be possibly another front runner for the prize. So I'm intrigued to read that.
Mm-hmm.
Piranesi, of course, being fantasy sort of
speculative fiction.
Speculative fiction has not appealed to me at all. But
no.
People just adore that book.
Yeah.
Have you
People
read it?
People loved her first book too, and I couldn't get on with that either.
Mm.
So, no, I probably, if it wins, maybe. We'll see.
I think I'll have to wait. Mm. Unsettled Ground by Claire Fuller, which is about middle-aged twins in, I think, rural England. So that tells about the experience of being sort of left behind or left out of the system in rural England. And Transcendent Kingdom, I should say, is about, I think, Ghanaian immigrants in America. That's the background of that book. And then How the One-Armed Sister Sweeps Her House, which is set on Barbados, which is we think of as this beautiful, idyllic
holiday island.
And that's not the story of this book. It's a very dark, bleak story that starts with a murder and then also has a story of domestic abuse and all sorts of things. Apparently quite harrowing, but I think very well done. And that sounds interesting. So I'm going to do I think I'll do Transcendent Kingdom, and I'd be keen to read most of the shortlist.
Yeah. I think it's a strong list.
See.
It's always hard to say when you've only read two of the six of the seven which is going to be the victor. But yeah, I think The Vanishing Half, I mean, it was one of my favorite books last year, so I think it would be hard to top, but I'm willing to give the rest of them a go.
Yeah, quite a varied list. Let us know what you think and who your tip is to win. So that's the Women's Prize shortlist. And also in women's writing, the Stella Prize has been announced for 2021 for the best Australian women's writing. And that has gone to Evie Wilde for The Bass Rock. So Amanda and I did this on the podcast. We loved it. It was also in our top books of the year.
Mm.
Must have been for last year.
Yeah,
for
you read it. It came out really early last year.
2020. It feels like ages ago. Mm. So now on to our book of the week, No One Is Talking About This by Patricia Lockwood, a book that many people are talking about. Tell us about Patricia Lockwood, Annie.
So Patricia Lockwood is a poet, an essayist, now a novelist. She has written a memoir. She was born in Indiana to a pretty religious family, and she documents that part of her life in her memoir, Priest Daddy, which is just uproariously funny. So Priest Daddy was on the top 10 New York Times list books of the year. It also won the Thurber Prize for American Humor. I think she probably got launched into the stratosphere of fame with her poem Rape Joke, which won the Pushcart Prize and was declared world famous by the Poetry Foundation in the US, and that was in 2015. She manages to write with humour and devastation in equal measures. So I've been looking forward to this novel for a long, long time.
Yeah, and that's interesting in the context of this novel that she had that real stratospheric moment of fame, in a sense.
Yeah, well, and she is also hugely Twitter famous. So she's been on the, I think she's in, someone's got a list of best tweets of all time, and she's on that twice. She's the only person to be on that twice. She's really big in this world of anti-humor and weird Twitter is those are both terms that are used. And I'm very much on the edge of that world. I do not have the time or attention span to engage with Twitter in the same way that you have to in order to be part of that demographic. But I think that this novel comes directly from the heart of that. She's also got two poetry collections. So she had Balloon Pop, Outlaw Black, which came out through a very small American press before her more mainstream collection, Motherland, Fatherland, Homeland, Sexuals. So I think just even from her titles, you can tell she's got a sense of humor. She weaponizes that and kind of is really on trend, part of the zeitgeist, but always reflexive and kind of looking inwards. So the book is about an author who becomes famous for a tweet, which is, Can a dog be twins? And she travels the world talking about this new communication style and the new ways that we think and exist on the portal, which is her kind of shorthand for the internet. But I think more specifically Twitter. It is a very, very online book. So I think my feeling reading the first half of it was that if you don't engage with Twitter in the same way, even peripherally that I do, or the internet in general, you're going to struggle with the first half of this book. I'd be interested to hear from people who have less internet usage than I do and know how they were able to get on with it, because it is also very funny. She travels the world. She kind of
Sorry to interrupt, but I see what you mean, because it could be that it's all like an in-joke.
Yeah, in I mean, there's so many jokes that it's all real as well, you know, like except for maybe this Can a Dog Be Twins tweet. Everything else in the book is a real moment on Twitter or a real moment in the world. So in the same way that Olivia Lang and Rachel Cusk and Jenny Offal kind of present these, they present the world as a mirror back to you in their novels. So she is traveling around the world. It's told in really tiny little snippets, very like Jenny Offal. So it's very fragmented. But as the book goes on, she gets a message from her mother saying that something bad has happened and she needs to come back immediately. And we won't give any spoilers as to what that is, because the second half of this book absolutely floored me. It took me by surprise about how real and how raw and how beautiful she was able to, how beautifully she was able to return to the real world. The question that the first half of the book really poses is this where we live now in this kind of hive mind portal? But I think the second half of the book really affirms, no, it's people and it's experience and it's touch and sight and smell that is what grounds us and what makes us whole. And yeah, it's a really, really, I wept so much in the last pages. Yeah. I was so affected by it. So yeah, I love this book for so many reasons. It's exactly in my niche, and I understand that I am like the specific readership of this book. But yeah, what did you think?
Yes, really loved it. So the first half is that surreal world of the online celebrity, quite satirical, becoming famous because that quite inane tweet goes viral, really funny, but also not funny because that happens, you know. And then she's jolted into real life when there's that crisis, which really puts everything into perspective. And the social media just seems so trivial. It recedes into the background, and it makes you realise when she doesn't do that for a few, you know, a day or a week, how quickly trends come and go in that world, because suddenly it's almost, it just seems irrelevant what happened last week. I loved the writing. I thought it was really strong writing, really propulsive, even though it's fragmented, so you don't get a traditional storyline. It doesn't matter, because the writing pulls you forward.
Yeah.
It's very tightly edited.
The character is so strong, you know, that all of these thoughts come from this one person who's been shaped by the portal, and so that's like their personality.
Yeah, so it was easy to grasp the character, and then the writing was always engaging, always interesting, and that pulls you forward even when there's not a huge plot, which is more the first half, that there's not a lot happening plot-wise. So, and the plot is occurring behind the scenes, between the lines, where she's functioning and having a marriage and a career, but you just see that between the lines, because clearly so much of her time is on the screen, and that is implicit. It's implied rather than spelt out, which I really liked. I like the subtlety of that. And the first half is fragmented, and of course that reflects the attention span that we have, where one minute we're thinking about climate change, the next minute we're wondering if a dog can be twins, and it's that literally we seem to shift between those big issues and the smaller issues, and that's the similar thing that Olivia Lang has spoken about, the dissonance of that. And so I found that first section, it is Twitter style in that way, and it read to me more like nonfiction, but that is a deliberate style, I think. So it skims over some really major issues, and that was, I think, to show how that's what we do, that we're not engaging. We think we're engaging with a, let's say, climate change or racism or the Me Too movement because we click something on social media, but then we keep scrolling and get to the hogs that have been released or something, and that is how I think a lot of people live. So I think that was the style was deliberately to illustrate that, and also it shows the sense of community that people get from the internet and those ephemeral in-jokes, which, as you've pointed out, some readers might not get.
And there's so many layers of understanding, you know, like I get this very surface read, but I think if you were deeply invested in weird Twitter, it would almost not be funny because it is, as you say, it's just reporting your life back to you. And so if you've been there for all of those moments, I mean, there's a bit, so she references memes and GIFs and things like that that are used as reactions and the ways that we try and then relate to those. So she says, when Caucasian blink.gif appeared, her eye travelled over it left to right as if it were 100,000 words. The little strings that connect human eyes to human eyes and human mouths to human mouths tugged her along with the expression. She bounced her eyebrows, bobbed her head back in her neck and blinked along. And I do that, you know, like with specific, this meme in particular, but like with specific memes and with specific reaction GIFs, you can't help but kind of find the humanity in a little picture of a person doing the thing.
That's
and
so
then you
funny.
Do the thing. And it's like seeing someone yawn or, you know, there's a kind of shared humanity in that. But I think she's really poking fun at the fact that it's a picture on a screen.
Yeah.
And you need to get a grip.
You need to get out more.
Totally. But well, I think also then it becomes really, that is how we live now. And those images do have power and the level of context that you can read into them. So say with the Pepe the Frog meme, I don't know if this is so alienating to our listeners, but you know, this is a meme that was generated on the left, co-opted by the right, and is now like deep state QAnon. If you post that meme, you're basically a Nazi. And I think people, especially older generations, cannot understand the level of context that you have to know in order to get that one image in the context of this whole bigger discussion. And it just feels like you have to be perpetually online because otherwise you're going to miss out and you're not going to be able to keep up with the conversation in the same way. You know, you're going to put your foot in it, you're going to make this huge gaffe by posting a funny frog meme, and then everyone's going to be like, well, you're cancelled, you're out of here. And you can really see how cancel culture has developed to be so decisive.
As you say, there are a lot of layers of understanding, and I was more on the surface layer.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how you say that if you're more into Twitter, it would almost read like just your life back to you, because one of my friends, Jamie Klingler, who has read all of the Women's Prize long list, she's a really good reader, she said she didn't love this because she reads to get away from Twitter and she wants a sort of satisfying, deep, engaging experience, and then she reads this and it felt like Twitter coming back to her. But I think that's more the first half.
Yeah,
and then
for sure
this, but I think there is method in the madness.
Yes,
because then,
and it's a shame we can't spoil anything, because
we won't spoil, but it does then delve in to real issues that her family's dealing with. So I think the character, this woman, the unnamed woman, matures. And so if it's not quite a coming of age, you do get the sense that towards the end she will participate more in life. I did get that real satisfaction of a change in the character and a transformation and a new situation by the end of it. So I felt like we really did follow her from a fairly immature beginning at the beginning of the novel to a much deeper character by the end. And I found that really satisfying, and it puts into perspective the first half
totally
beautifully. And so I really loved it, but I know Eric and Anna, so Eric Carl Anderson at the Lonesome Reader and Anna James do on YouTube, they do a Women's Prize series of videos. Mm. And when they were talking about this book, Anna just absolutely loved
it. Yes, she's very on Twitter though.
Eric said no, because to him it was touching, it was too superficial on these issues, and he couldn't kind of get a grip on, he didn't feel like it was an immersive sort of novel as such. It was more that scroll, as you said, that it can read like that. But
I think, as you say, she does grow over the end of the novel, and I think it's about allowing yourself to feel. And, you know, we live in an age where vulnerability is lauded in an outward sense, that performing vulnerability is really applauded, but to actually have vulnerability and to respond to the things that are going on in your life with compassion and care and showing up, you know, I think she's really illustrating that divide between being online can only ever be this ephemeral thing that might make you feel good in the moment, but afterwards doesn't actually mean anything. Whereas if you put the work in and use your body in the world to care and love and support the people around you, then that is a really profound experience, and it puts all of your other kind of internet dalliances to shame.
No, I thought this was really stunning and just very tight, very strong writing.
Yeah, I think not for everyone, but if you like Jenny Offal and Olivia Lang, I think you'll like this.
Yes, good. So that was No One Is Talking About This by Patricia Lockwood, which is on the Women's Prize shortlist. And coming up is Mrs. Death, Mrs. Death by Selena Godden. So stay tuned for that one. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go or email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at Mr. _Annie.
Wonderful. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.